Testing 1, 2, 3.
Interview April 30th, 1980. Spencer Wiley of United Auto Workers. Interviewed by Greg Perkins, Cal State University Long Beach Oral History Resource Center.
I was wondering if you could give me some of the personal or family background that got you involved in the union movement and what your first experiences in the union movement were.
Well, my family background was none. My involvement came because of the war. When I came to California in around 1940-41, I started working at Cal Shipyard as a sweeper. And then I went to school and at night to learn welding and become a certified maintenance welder. And I had to join the Boilermakers Union. I had to pay dues, but I wasn't allowed to go to the meetings. So I worked a while there, and I quit. And I went to the UAW, the U.S. Spring and Bumper Company, along about 1944. At U.S. Spring and Bumper Company, some of the majority race representatives, so they thought they saw some potentiality in me and encouraged me to participate in the union affairs. I had very little knowledge except bad. But comparing the Boilermakers with the UAW, it was so much different that I decided I would try to make a contribution. The first job I had was on the education committee. I worked on the education committee for a couple of years, and then most of the people in the plant, the leaders in the plant, started pushing me, and I kept developing. They had schools they would send me to, UAW education schools. And I would like to backtrack a little and say that I was the third black that they was ever hired in the plant. So after going to school and advancing, I decided that I would try to keep going ahead and run for the bargaining committee. The odds were very difficult. About 100 black, 700-800 white, 300-400 Mexicans. Two white, that wasn't myself, ran on a slate using the slogans, "Have guts." I was able to win the election. The two white fellows lost. And then I became a bargaining committeeman, and which was a full-time job. I had my office with four other fellows. And some of the white fellows came to me and acknowledged their prejudice, but they felt like that I was different, that I was for someone that they felt like could represent anybody. It was, in my mind, the reason I got the breaks I did, it was a matter of necessity for the union to have the insight to see the value of some blacks participating in the structure. My experience was very good with the UAW. I moved up to the top echelon become the vice president of the AFL-CIO as a representative from the CIO.
How late was that?
That was about 6 years after my beginning in the movement. I first became a trustee of the old CIO, and then when we merged, then I became a vice president of the AFL-CIO.
So that was around 54?
Yes.
Okay. I was wondering if you could describe a little more how the plant you worked in fit into, was it the aircraft industry related?
I worked, it was the auto industry, which we made parts for aircraft and auto.
I see.
But after a few years, in 1957, I was then appointed to the international staff, which handled aircraft and all of the industries.
Okay.
Which I worked them throughout the seven western states. I was the education director for the whole international union. And therefore, put me into the aircraft North America, Douglas plants that's located here in Long Beach and in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that you had, your first involvement was through the Boilermakers Union. One of the other people I'd interviewed is Walter Williams, did you have any contact with him and the work he was doing in the 40s in the Boilermakers Union?
Well, what happened, when the Boilermakers Union, we didn't have any rights.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did, the FML at that time had to set up a separate union down on Main Street. And I refused to participate.
Right. That was an organized boycott, wasn't it?
Yes, it was an organized boycott on lots of the blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to make it work, but it wouldn't work.
Were you involved in the lawsuit against the company and the union?
No.
No.
I wasn't involved.
No.
At that time, after quitting the forum, because I went directly to the UAW.
And so, in other words, it was just a bad situation you didn't want any part of?
It was a bad situation that some people was taking advantage of it for their own selfish reasons, some likes.
Oh, the people who were the leaders of the Jim Crow local?
Yes, yeah. They were taking advantage of it for their own selfish reasons.
But not very many of the black workers actually attended the meetings.
No, it didn't. It didn't. It wasn't of no value. It didn't become any force at all for us in the black community or in the labor movement. It had no power.
You didn't have the same privileges as the people in the parent local, right?
Well, you didn't have any privileges at all. You were still segregated, and you just was there. It was just identity of identifying you as a part of the union. We had no voice, and it was, you had no power. Therefore, that's the most principal thing in a union, is having a say on how it operates.
But even the benefits weren't equal between you and the members of the...
Well, what happened in the war, we were still under the same bureaucracy. They were in the same, which I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the same bureaucracy. It was just an outlet to identify with the community that they were. Was a black union.
Okay. So you did that. That didn't give you a negative attitude towards unions in general, just towards.
No, because it was my first experience was negative.
Mm-hmm.
My background was not union, mm-hmm. And my first experience was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
but after joining with the UAW and the CIO, which had a different concept of unionism, then I saw the good parts of it, the parts that had something to do with people. It had more to do besides working condition hours and wages. It had something to do with the person after he leaves the shop again.
How did the people in the community feel about the CIO in general and the UAW in particular?
Well, the people in the community felt very close as in regards to the labor movement with the CIO, because it fought for the battles that they were fighting for. And it was a very unhappy moment when they merged with the FFL. And the UAW, after working with the UAW, and happened to be in a position to work in the community and give directions to the union in regards to help in the community. I didn't only do this in the black community, I did it in all communities. I was not, as the education director of the UAW education department, the minority was 10% was black, 85% was white.
Right.
And I worked throughout the seven western states, and I had no problems of bringing to those communities help to our membership and the other people who live in those communities, financially, educationally, and otherwise. I also, after working about 4 years as education director, I then was moved up to legislative director. And I worked for in the legislative field until I retired.
Okay. Well, the time period I'm mainly interested in is the war years, the 40s, and I was just wondering specifically how people viewed the CIO in the black community. Was it a sort of a rallying point for people who were trying to obtain social justice?
Yes, it was. It was a rallying point because they did something about it. The CIO give leadership in it, so not only by manpower, by finances. And most of the things that the NAACP and other civil rights organizations fought for was the program of the CIO and the UAW, and therefore it made them allies. And Walter Luther came along as a spokesman for the underdog, white and black. And so everyone became the loving. And everyone, and so many people were so close to the CIO. Much different than the FFL because of the discrimination in the FFL. For many years, they kept in their constitution of not allowing blacks to become members. So many of them. That was different in the CIO. In the FFL, they didn't allow a lot of people to become officers or be among the power structure. That was different in the CIO. They had blacks in the top level position.
What specific issues did the CIO become involved in outside of the shop in a community?
Housing. Civil rights and civil liberties issues.
Like housing?
Housing, discrimination in hiring, police brutality.
Mm-hmm. How did they get involved in police brutality? Was that in the 40s?
By working with community groups, You see, what would happen is instead of the CIO as a union saying that we are independent entity of the area, they felt like they were part. They had members on the NAACP. They had members on the other civil rights organization, Urban League. And therefore, they would be a part of that movement that was playing these various things that affect the black people.
I was just wondering if there were any specific cases that you remember of brutality that they specifically took a lead in.
Well, it's been so many, I couldn't say that.
Yes.
There's been so many.
Nothing stands
that I could understand, except I think it was the Emmett Till case, that's in the South.
Oh, right. I'm thinking specifically in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
There were so many of them that they're doing those days,
yeah.
And so many now that mm-hmm. It's pretty difficult to put your finger on those back at that time. Some of the present ones I remember.
How about the restrictive housing covenants?
They fought for the fair housing proposition. 14, they fought for against restrictive. They joined in with the NAACP to fight that in the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. With Warren Miller?
Yes.
And so, just basically, by virtue of the fact that they had representatives on the NAACP board and other community organizations, they were right in the middle of things.
Of things. I'm not saying now that. And that these organizations are pure,
mm-hmm.
because they have the people that make up these organizations are the same people as long some of them in Ku Klux Klan or other people, but the leadership of the organization and the majority was given the type of leadership to make it blend into the organization, and they have enough power to carry it out. Lots of times, those are the objections of some people. And during that time, we had a big struggle with the Communist Party, where they were very diligent in trying to get their, especially in the CIO, they tried to get their views over that they thought was right, and they would stay in a meeting until hours and hours of the night and try to wait till everybody go home so they could vote. But that was taken care of, and but it was a terrific fight in the early days. And a lot of times they tried to label the CIO communists.
The government and the companies?
Oh, I don't know for sure whether that the federal, I don't think the federal government, but there were the different organizations and different politicians and different groups tried to identify the CIO as communist meaning because of the issues they're fighting. If you look at it today, it's the same thing. If you get fighting too strongly on an issue that affects civil liberties and civil rights, they will say you're communist.
Right.
That's one of the weapons that they use.
Sure. Was there any type of government harassment, like FBI, people visiting the employers and
plants? I have heard of it, but I had none.
Okay, you...
During the McCarthy days, I've heard of people being harassed and things, but I have never been.
Not in the 40s either.
No.
Were you aware of the competition between the IAM and the UAW in the aircraft industry during the 40s?
Yes.
How did the question of black membership fit into that?
Well, it had its effect in lots of instances, although the IAM was ahead of the UAW when they started organizing, aircraft. They were much stronger.
They had Lockheed Vega.
Yeah, and they were stronger, and then they had the Epervale behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a more organizing, a big organizing staff and everything. And it had a role to play. But at that time, you take, during the early days, there was lots of jobs available. And lots of jobs that was better than aircraft. And it was a difficult time organizing, period. Most of the things that people were thinking about was wage and hours and work conditions. And that was mostly on their mind. And the racial issue came up a lot, but you had to limit that to, that wouldn't be the only issue that would be paramount on a person's mind. But it had some bearing in some places. Mm-hmm. But far as the struggle between the UAW and the machinists, I think that they, at the time, they were just a little bit stronger.
Right. But they did win the election at North American, and do you, were you aware of the situation there when the...
We won the election in North America.
Right, the UAW.
Yeah.
Right. And I was led to believe that one of the reasons for that is that there were a substantial number of black workers there, and they just did not want the IAM in there because they...
Well, what happened, I couldn't say because exactly that was the reason. Mm-hmm. Because I've heard several things in regards to organized desires. But to say that that was overwhelming, the reason I couldn't say it, the only thing, you see, one thing, and most of the plants, the black, you didn't have that many members, black, to really overturn an election. And I do feel like that during the war times, you had more black than usual. That's when they went to going into aircraft, because of the force of women went to going into aircraft. Mm-hmm. But you had such a terrific turnover after, in the late 40s. And I don't know for sure which the... I never was an organizer. We have discussed it, you know, in our meetings, but I couldn't tell you for sure whether that was... Mm-hmm. I would think it would have a plus.
Would you say that the there was also a lot to do with the quality of the bargaining agreement as far as...
Oh, yes. We had the UAW were able to mold a better union together than the IAM. And that's the strength that tells you about your bargaining. We have been very successful, and we have kept the IAM. Getting together before a collective bargaining agreement, expire and discuss things that go out and would fight for. But our structure is different. You see, in the IAM, they are not as democratic as the UAW. And our structure is done with the members during the negotiating. And we have international union there to assist them. But we have a bargaining committee made up of our membership.
So it comes from the ground up.
Yeah. So that has a great bearing on your power.
And that appeals to everybody.
Yeah. Those people elected those people. So the international is there to carry the ball and assist those people. But they have the last word. And so therefore that makes a little bit difference in collective bargaining.
So there was cooperation between the IAM and UAW during the 40s, or
I would say that it wasn't too much during the 40s. Later on.
Later on
it did. But during the 40s, they were pretty bitter against Oak. There was lots of infighting during that time, in the 40s.
Do you remember anything about Herbert Ward during that period and the work he was doing out at Lockheed Vega with the Army?
I got acquainted with Herbert later.
Oh. But you didn't know him then?
Oh, I had heard of Herb, but Herb was in the shop at that time, and inside negotiating, I think, collective bargaining. And I heard of Herb after I got to be on the Vice President of the Federation, as to know him. But I didn't know of his work as an organizer, because he worked more in that field than I did. I worked more on the other level than he did.
Was there any sense among trade unionists in the black community of being a special group of people who, by virtue of the fact that they were unionists and had that strength behind them, that they could bring about change more effectively in that community? Or did they think of it more as a member of the NAACP or a member of the community group?
In the 40s, I would think that there was a minority of the blacks felt like that the union was the one that would be instrumental in getting that civil rights. I think NAACP was the overriding one, because up until the end of the 40s, before too many went to get an active and really knowing the union, it had to be sold to them, to lots of people, because of that background was not union. Like, even you take an FML where they used to have the carpenter from the bottom on up, they keep it going on up. They had background in unions, but in the CIO, it wasn't too many people that had a background of their parents. And in the 40s, when they went to get the opportunity to get in these shops, it took some time. And I feel like that there was a minority of blacks that depended upon the unions, but the majority, I would think, is dependent upon the NAACP.
So there wasn't any sense of a coalition of black trade unionists at that time?
I think later, in the middle 40s, there was became a coalition probably along about 1947.
Okay. I was wondering if we could go back.
But what happened is the leadership in the CIO got involved, went to get involved and involved in more of their members, and went into the different organizations, and in turn they would go to their meetings and talk, and then they went to get confidence, you know, building up confidence. And then a coalition went to being formed with the more or less with the different liberal groups, I would say Jewish group and the lots of the Democrats party at various groups. They went to form a coalition. And then during the elections, they would form coalitions. But far as the question I think you asked me is whether or not I felt that the black trade unionists depended upon the union or the or other organizations for their freedom, I think in that was
okay. Yeah, that was my question. Thank you. Just backtracking a little, around 41, A. Philip Randolph was trying to put some pressure on the Roosevelt administration because, like you say, there was all these job opportunities becoming available, and the black community wasn't getting their fair share, and he threatened to organize a march on Washington. And I was just wondering if that March on Washington movement or the FEPC that came as a result of that had much of an impact on Los Angeles.
I think both. I think the March on Washington had a great impact. And my following up, the follow-up helped to implement that impact. I definitely feel like it did. Phil Brandlaw did a terrific job.
Were there any types of grassroots committees supporting his March on Washington in Los Angeles back in 41?
As I can remember, he had the community back and forth as how much, I mean, he had the feeling was there. How much actual work was done, I don't know. But the feeling was there. What happens, the NAACP and all the other organizations which is a part of the people joined forces with him. Effort.
And
but he spearheaded it. They ever all the other liberal and civil rights organizations, not only black, but others.
Do you remember the FEPC hearing?